Hey, Kim, guess what time of year it is?
It's Halloween, and we've got a week of creepiness for our listeners.
Yep, October 26th to the 30th, we'll be celebrating our favorite holiday with you, our favorite people.
Each day, we'll have a brand new mini episode of something creepy and crawly for you to enjoy.
So stop in and listen every day, then tweet us for a chance at some killer kudzu giveaways. Cut that out. It's undignified.
Okay. Hey, y'all. Thanks for coming back to listen to another Friday episode of Kudzu Killers, Homicide, and Sweet Tea.
I'm Lark, and that other voice you hear is Kim. For the next 15 minutes or so, we hope to bring y'all an interesting tidbit about crime, or a story we feel you'll like but just doesn't have enough information available for a full episode.
We hope you enjoy these tasty morsels of good old Southern Gothic mayhem.
So sit back, grab your glass of iced tea, relax, and enjoy yourself. So now, on with the show. How's it going?
It's going all right.
I'm glad to hear.
Made it through another week.
I know.
That's always an accomplishment.
I know. And we're still alive. Haven't killed each other. Haven't killed anybody.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yet. But we are here to talk about our favorite subject, which is, what is it?
Mayhem. Murder.
Murder.
Bad stuff.
Murder. Murder. Anyway, since it's Friday, it's not actually a story about a case, but I know we talk about a lot, murder and death, but have you ever actually stood by a person while they died?
No, just before, but not while. No.
Well, looking back, you might recall some of the things I'm going to tell you guys about today. Also, do you know how the police use a body to help solve a murder or an unattended death?
Yeah, well, more or less, but yeah.
Well, we're also going to talk about that.
Cool.
So I do hope that none of y'all have to experience watching a person die. But if you do, maybe here's a little of what might prepare you for it and see the signs coming. Today, we're going to actually talk about what happens when someone dies and the changes that take place in the body after the fact. So the actual decomp process.
Yummy.
I know. And then how the police use the changes in the body after you're actually dead for clues to solve homicides. The legal definition of death is tied to brain activity. And most of us are familiar with causes of death like heart attack, cancer, and stroke. But broadly speaking, the events that cause our death can be divided into three categories. Accidental deaths, which result from bodily injuries sustained in events like car accidents, falls, and drowning. Violent deaths due to homicide or suicide. And natural deaths, which include diseases and old age. Each breath provides the oxygen necessary for survival to the rest of the body. Very simply, dying starts to happen when your body doesn't get the oxygen it needs to survive.
Right.
I mean, that's just basic, down to the brass tacks. Different cells die at different speeds. So the length of the dying process depends on which cells are deprived of oxygen. So the brain requires a tremendous amount of oxygen, but keeps very little in reserve. So any cutoff of oxygen to the brain will result in cell death within 3 to 7 minutes. That's why a stroke can kill you so quickly. So if someone is strangling you consistently,
right,
it's going to take 4 to 6 minutes to die.
That's a long time to have your hands wrapped around somebody's neck and press it.
It's a very long time, but also if you think about it, that's a long time to struggle too. So, you know, kick and scream and do your best, y'all, if this ever happens to you. So when blood is cut off from the heart, a heart attack occurs and can also take your life fairly swiftly. Life expectancy for women is 81.2 years, and for men, it's 76.4 years. So ultimately, your body system just wears out, okay?
Right.
But when someone dies of extremely old age, meaning a natural death. These are some of the outward signs that these systems are going to slow down or slowly shutting down and that death is on its way. 1 to 3 months before death, a person is likely to sleep or doze more, eat and drink less, withdraw from people and stop doing things they used to enjoy. If they're old, they're going to talk less. But if they're a child, they actually start to talk more.
Really?
And they're said to ask really tough questions. They start asking lots of questions that...
Well, that starts at about 3 or 4 anyway.
Well, I'm not sure, but I think they're asking questions about, you know, I think they know what's happening. So they're asking stuff like, where am I going? What's going on?
Aww.
You know, yeah, that's kind of sad. So the person will begin sleeping more to conserve that little bit of energy that they have that's left. And when that energy is gone, the individual may lose their appetite or their desire to eat and then to drink. And swallowing also becomes difficult and your mouth gets really dry. Mm-hmm. So forcing the person to eat or drink could cause choking. 1 to 2 weeks before death, the person may feel tired and drained all the time so that they don't even want to leave their bed or they don't leave their bed. And then come changes in blood pressure and breathing and heart rate. Their body temperature goes up and down and it may leave their skin cool or warm or kind of moist. I hate that word. Or pale,
my least favorite
but kind of damp and dewy and yucky, yellow, clammy. That's what our grandmothers used to say. You feel clammy.
Right.
There's the word. That's much better than moist. Ick. And then confusion, or they seem to be like in a daze or a stare, right? And then the dying sometimes even experience hallucinations and visions. Or get this, they can become completely clear-headed in their final hours. So if they
that
were,
I have seen. Yeah, that it? I have seen. They're slowly fading away and then all of a sudden for the day they're bright-eyed and they're talking and you're thinking, "Oh, they're getting a lot better. They're a lot better today." And then the next day they die.
They're toast. Yeah. They don't really know why. And then as this continues, the dying person loses their bladder and bowel control, but accidents actually occur less because those gastrointestinal functions shut down as well as they eat less, basically. And so also any pain that the dying person feels at this point can usually be managed by a doctor in some way, but it can be really hard to watch. I mean,
yes.
I've personally gone through this. But I think you have to know that from what I'm learning here, what you guys will learn, it's just a step that they go through and it's not necessarily as bad as it looks, for lack of a better way to put it.
Right.
The stage right before a person dies is called the agonal phase. The dying person is often disoriented, but again, can be clear-minded. And they seem like they can't get comfortable, they're moving a lot. It'll also seem like they can't catch a breath. And there may be these just like agonizing pauses between long and labored breaths. You think maybe, okay, they're gone. They're not breathing. Oh God, they're back. Right? So it's just, So often too, there's a fluid that builds up in their lungs and that congestion will cause a sound that I'm sure you've heard your grandparents talk about known as the death rattle.
Right. Yeah.
It's like a heavy wheezing, you know? So as the cells inside a person lose their connections, the person may start convulsing or having muscle spasms. And we don't exactly know how the person's feeling at this point. You know, though some of these people who've had near-death experiences seem to agree that the process isn't painful.
Okay.
And some doctors think that a near-death experience might be due to endorphins that the body is releasing at the actual moment of death.
Okay.
Which kind of doesn't make sense to me, except for, okay, well, they're at the actual moment and then they get brought back. So, that maybe makes it more clear, but. So when the heartbeat and the breath stop, the person is clinically dead. There's no circulation and no reserves of oxygen are reaching the cells. However, clinical death also denotes that this is a point where the process is reversible by means of CPR, a transfusion, or a ventilator.
Okay.
The point of no return is biological death, which begins about 4 to 6 minutes after clinical death.
Okay, so I've always heard the deal that, you know, for the brain's still working for like 4 or 5 minutes after death, and you can talk to somebody who's died and they might actually hear you. Is that, did you read anything about that?
I did not read anything about that specifically, but after the heartbeat stops, it only takes that long for brain cells to begin dying from lack of oxygen, and resuscitation is impossible at that point.
Right.
After the heart stops beating, the body immediately starts turning cold. This phase is known as algor mortis, or the death chill. Each hour, the body temperature falls about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit, 0.83 degrees Celsius, until it reaches room temperature. At the same time, without circulation to keep it moving through the body, blood starts to pool and settle. And rigor mortis, which we all know about, or a stiffening of the body, sets in about 2 to 6 hours after death. While the body as a whole might be dead, little things within the body are still alive. Skin cells, for example, can be viably harvested for up to 24 hours after death. But some things that are still alive lead to the putrefaction or the decomposition of the body. And we're talking about the little organisms that live in the intestines. So a few days after death, these bacteria and enzymes start to process or break down their host, meaning the body. The pancreas is full of so many bacteria that it essentially digests itself. As these organisms work their way to other organs, the body becomes discolored, first turning green, then purple, then black. And you'll smell it more likely before you see it, because the bacteria create a nasty, horrible smell. And that's a gas.
It's kind of unlike any other smell. If you've ever smelled death, it's kind of like, there's no other smell like that. It's unmistakable.
It is the smell of death. So if the smell doesn't make you run to toss your cookies, the gas that causes the body to bloat, the eyes to bulge out of their sockets, and the tongue to swell and protrude might, at the very least, I would think you would gag. I haven't personally seen a body like that, not up close in person. I've seen dead bodies, but never actually seen that. Anyway, this process builds up in pressure after a few weeks without embalming or cremation. And in rare instances, it can cause, again, decomposing pregnant women to expel the fetus in a process known as coffin birth.
Which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago.
We did. We discussed that at length. So check back for that groovy episode. Rigor mortis is the reason why the word stiff is a slang term for a dead body. Because 2 or 3 hours after a person or an animal dies, the muscles start to stiffen. This occurrence progresses in a downward head-to-toe direction. And in 12 to 18 hours, the body is, as they say, as stiff as a board.
And then in another like 24 hours or so, it starts, the tissues start to decompose and it loosens up again, right?
It takes a little bit longer than that. So we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So at this stage, can only move.
I'm sorry. Kim is a ghoul and knows about stuff like this. So, you know,
I had you totally in mind. Totally in mind when I did this, because I thought if Kim wants to know, but of course Kim already probably knows, then other people will want to know. So I'm going down this road just for y'all.
Sorry, Kim is a ghoul. If you guys probably already know this by now if you listen to us regularly.
Y'all get to know us kind of close. Anyway, at this stage, like I say, you can move the joints only by force, breaking them in the process. So I can't really even imagine what that sounds like, you know? Can't even imagine.
I don't want to.
But from what you're asking, it takes 2 days for the rigor mortis to fade.
I knew that it does fade as the tissues break down.
It does. It and there's a reason for that, which I'll explain in a second too. But yeah, it takes about 2 days. And then once it does, then once it starts to fade away, the decay actually starts to set in. So if the body isn't embalmed or cooled to 38 degrees Fahrenheit, 3.3 degrees Celsius or below, it will quickly decompose.
Okay.
A week after death, the skin has blistered and the slightest touch could cause it to fall off.
Lovely.
I know. It gets better. A month after death, I knew you'd love this. A month after death, the hair, nails, and teeth will fall out. So while old wives' tales long rumored that the hair and nails keep growing after death, They don't actually have any magical growth powers like, you know, they used to think. He's a vampire because his nails grew. They just look bigger because his skin's driving out, basically, you know.
So the teeth fall out because you see all these skulls when they find skulls and they've still got some teeth in there. So,
you know, I don't understand why sometimes their teeth fall out, sometimes they don't. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, so I couldn't
bad
say.
Bad dental hygiene, you know, your dentist tells
probably,
you to clean twice a year.
Probably by those people that shall remain nameless that dip, just saying.
Or those kids who don't brush their teeth at night.
Exactly. But, you know, there's one specific person in mind here. So anyway, internal organs and tissues have liquefied by then, and they start to swell the body until it bursts with glee. Ooh. Open, Kim.
Where does it burst open at first? The abdomen?
Yes. Yes. And then from that point on, only a skeleton remains as they gook out and eventually ooze everywhere, causing us to look back to our crime scene cleanup episode and how much it costs if you don't find them in time. So, to police, medical examiners, and lawyers in the criminal justice system, rigor mortis has a lot of significance. They point to clues to understand the circumstances of someone's unexpected and possibly violent death. So rigor mortis is a piece of the forensic jigsaw puzzle, and combined with other details, it can help detectives and medical examiners really figure out what happened. So during rigor mortis, another process called autolysis, if I said that right, autolysis takes place. And this is the self-digestion of the body cells, where the walls of the cells give way and their contents flow out. I guess you'd say in layman's term, they burst open. So rigor mortis ends not because the muscles relax, but because autolysis takes over. So that does that answer your question? The muscles break down and become soft on their way to further decomposition. The relative stiffness of the body is most important to investigators, as a body goes stiff in the exact position that it was in when the person died. Ambient temperature is a clue to the time of death. Warm conditions speed up the onset and pace of rigor mortis by providing a hospitable environment for the bacteria and processes that cause decay. And then cold temperatures, on the other hand, slow it down. So if someone dies outside in like freezing temperatures, rigor mortis can last for days. And sometimes the investigators even abandon it entirely as a tool for estimating the time of death.
Right.
If someone dies while engaging in strenuous activity, like exercising or struggling against drowning, rigor mortis can set in immediately. I find that curious.
Yeah, that's very odd.
And this instant onset, sometimes called cadaveric spasm, happens because the person's muscles at the moment of death were depleted of oxygen energy.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. So they just spasmed and stuck that way.
Right. This is why the victim of a violent attack may be still clutching the attacker's hair or a piece of clothing, you know? Why are they holding that? Because, yeah,
right.
They went into that mode. So investigators also look at fat distribution on the body. Fat acts as insulation, causing rigor mortis to develop more slowly. Also, in people with low muscle mass, such as children and elderly, or those who are having a fever at the time or a debilitating disease, rigor progresses really quickly. So because rigor mortis leaves a lot of room for doubt, forensic pathologists rely on other indicators that provide greater certainty as to the time of death. And these include your body temperature, because the body cools at the rate of 1.5 to 2 degrees per hour. That's why you're seeing these people on TV trying to cool the body down and all that, or heat it up. But you really can't fake out a scientist. I'm here to tell you, Kim knows everything.
Not true. But, you know, thanks.
And a body that registers approximately 92 degrees Fahrenheit, 33.33 degrees Celsius, has been dead for about 4 hours. So you can keep that in mind, all this trivia. They also look to stomach contents by determining the degree of digestion of the last meal. Examiners can gauge how long the person lived after eating. And another little fun fact, look at insect activity. Flies gather around the eyes, mouth, or other openings to feed on the body fluids. Forensic entomologists can determine approximately how long someone's been dead by observing the life cycle of the flies as well as their eggs and larvae. And I'm hoping, I keep pushing Kim to do a show on this, so hopefully she will do more about bugs in general.
I'm considering it. I'm a bug girl.
We need to, we have to vote and, you know, write in and beg for what we want. So anyway, meanwhile, lividity, also known as livermortis, not liver mortis, it's liver, L-I-V-O-R, mortis, is the telltale purple coloring that develops when the body has been in one position for a while.
So like when the blood all sinks down to the spot where they've been laying? Yeah.
Right. There's absolutely no way you can fake that, and it just doesn't lie, because once the blood is congealed, it's going to tell the story of a body's change in position after death. So if you try to move it, the body's not going to, the blood's already, it's like jello.
Right.
It congeals and it won't flow to a new place. So now y'all know about the stages of death and what happens to our physical bodies after we die and how the police use our body forensically to determine more about a homicide. So I thought that was interesting.
That's very interesting.
Any questions? Any comments?
I like that. No, I mean, it's just, you know, like I said, I'm a ghoul, so these things interest me.
Well, I just wanted to know about the rates of, you know, the body. How fast does the body cool? How fast does it go through rigor mortis? You know, details. They never really explain on shows. They just say the body's been in rigor, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and half the time the stuff they spew out isn't true anyway. So, you know,
if you're
talking about CSI and those kind of shows, NCIS, a lot of the times the stuff is just kind of what fits into their little episode or their little whatever they're trying to make on their show. So
right, but Kim and I like facts, so we like to sit there and poke those things, holes in those things, because
so I'm a miserable person to go to a movie with, because I will sit there and point out every hole in the plot and point out everything that they did wrong. And nope, that's not a 1979 blah, 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 blah.
Right,
it's 1984.
Right.
So, you know, just don't even try to go to a movie with me.
So now you too can poke holes in the next forensic TV show that you watch, because you will know that the body cools at a rate of 1.5 to 2 degrees per hour.
There you go.
We are here to inform y'all. And so
right.
Our work here is done.
That's right. That's another wrap up of a Forensic Friday here.
That's
on
right.
Crazy Killers.
So you guys remember, don't bury the bodies without us.
Bye now.
Bye, y'all.
That's our episode for this week. Thanks for listening to us, and we hope you join us again every Tuesday for an exciting new episode.
Head on over to our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com and leave a comment or your ideas about the subject this week.
Or follow us on Twitter at kudzukillerspod, and you can shout out to us anytime or send a question for our next Q&A.
Yes, ma'am, and we'd love you forever if you leave us a review on whatever podcast blows you scared up. We'd love to hear what you think of our new show.
If you'd like to become a part of the Kudzu Killers family, hop on over to patreon.com/kudzukillerspodcast and take a look at the goodies you get when you show us some love.
That's right. And if you love our music, check out Jody Jennings Music on Facebook, SoundCloud, or all social media and streaming music platforms.
So until next week,
or if we decide to shoot out a mini episode,
bye y'all.
Bye, y'all.